Lenny Radio Network.
Hey!
Oh, are you listening?
When you find yourself in danger, when you're threatened by a stranger, when it looks like you will take a licking, there is someone waiting who will hurry up and rescue you. Just call
OTR Rob.
There is someone waiting who will hurry up and rescue you this fall.
OTR Rob.
And now, here is OTR Rob.
Hey everyone, this is OTR Rob welcoming you to Fibber and Molly and the block of Fibber and Molly shows. And this Fibber and Molly comes from 1947, December 9th. And it's called the Gazette Interview. And after that is Our Miss Brooks from November 7th, 1954, Switchboard Operator, and You Bet Your Life. From 1950, April 12th. Again, the secret word is door. D-O-O-R. Enjoy all these, and I'll see you all back here next week. Have a great weekend, everyone. Enjoy the show.
The Wistful Vista Gazette is running a series of articles on the daily lives of typical local citizens. So naturally, the first one they'd interview would be a man who is a social and civic leader, a captain of industry, and one of the city's favorite sons. Yep, that's the one they ran last week. This week, they're going way out in left field to interview Fibber McGee and Molly.
That's right, Mrs. Toops. Clementine Clark's column in the Gazette. Yes, McGee and me. How's that? Oh, she wants to spend the day with us and write it up. Yes, any minute now. Be sure and read it tomorrow. Goodbye, Mrs. Toop. McGee, I think she's jealous.
Well, Matt, the only time the Toops has ever made the papers was the time Mort stooped over to pick up a nickel at the Barntown and got his necktie caught in the escalator.
Say, I don't remember that.
You don't? It tossed him right on his kisser in the gent's underwear. You saw the headlines, escalator throws man on osculator. Hey, what time is that what's-your-name from the Gazette due, Molly?
Clementine Clark. She didn't say exactly, dearie, just sometime this morning. Mm-hmm. Oh, my, I'm so excited. Imagine us getting written up in the paper.
Yeah, well, I want to get this desk littered up good here now. Give it that new look.
I just cleaned that desk up, McGee.
That's okay, I got it messed up good now. As soon as the doorbell rings, you let her in, see? I'll be working on my novel here, and I'll turn around...
Your novel?
You know my novel, Molly. The one I started in high school.
Oh. Now, McGee, the woman doesn't want us to do anything unusual. She wants a story of just an average day with us.
Oh, my gosh, you know me, Molly. I never had an average day in my life. There's always something. I'll give her plenty to write about, though. Don't you worry.
Well, I only hope you don't...
Oh, here she comes. Quick. Where's my novel? Oh, here it is. My pencil. Where's my pencil? I gotta have a pencil.
Behind your ear.
Here. Oh, which ear? Oh, my gosh. She's coming. I want to look. Oh, here it is. Okay, okay. Let her in.
Come in.
Hello there, kid.
Oh. Hi, old-timer.
Hello, Mr. Old-timer. We thought you were somebody else.
You did?
Yeah.
Must be the way I got my hair combed different, daughter. Do I get parted in the middle like this, kid?
Yeah, that's a swell part you got there, all right. Must be 6 inches wide.
Yeah, it seems like I got more skin on my head than I used to, Johnny.
You ever stop to think maybe your hair is getting thinner?
Hair getting thinner? Who ever heard of hair getting fat?
No kidding, you ought to do something about it, old-timer. Ever try bay rum?
That's no good, Johnny. Huh? I've tried it lots of times. But all it does is give me the hiccups. Hey, you kids were expecting somebody.
Who?
A reporter from the Gazette, Mr. Old-timer. She's coming to interview us.
Is that so?
Yes.
I used to be in the newspaper racket myself, kid.
Yeah?
Yep, I was the first girl reporter in Chicago.
Girl reporter?
Yep. I reported a girl. Johnny. A policeman come up and he made her give me back my Mickey Mouse watch and all three wallets.
Three wallets? My gosh, you were lucky to get all of them back.
I sure was, Johnny. I'd always wanted a wallet, too.
Around a newspaper office myself at one time, running errands and stuff.
I didn't know that, dearie. Yeah. What were you, a printer's devil?
I guess so. They were always telling me to go straight.
A McGee!
That's pretty good, Johnny. But even if you'd have finished it, that ain't the way I hit it. The way I hit it, one feller says to tell a feller, says, here they got a new cub reporter down at the newspaper. Is that so, says t'other feller. Wonderful what they can train them bears to do, ain't it? Oh, sorry, kids. I had a joke when I left the house. I must have mislaid it.
My hair look, McGee. Miss Clark ought to be here pretty soon.
Oh, you look great, kiddo. I'm ready to be interviewed anytime now myself, too. I got my novel laid out here. A few old telegrams scattered around the desk.
No cablegram?
No, I don't want to exaggerate. Boy, oh boy, this town will really sit up when they read the story she pries out of me. Just imagine the headline, Fibber McGee, prominent author, sportsman, artist, sculptor. Oh, hey, sculptor. Where's my modeling clay, Molly? I gotta have my modeling clay.
Oh, McGee, no, please, huh? Now. I put that stuff up in the attic the last time I scraped it off the Davenport.
Well, I can get it later. I hope you didn't muss it up, though. I was working on a thing at Doc Gamble. Sort of a bust.
A brave confession.
Boy, will Doc ever be jealous when he sees all the publicity we're getting tomorrow. Oh, boy. He'll burn up like a bride's toast.
Well, when the lady interviews us now, dearie, let's be honest with her. Let's just be ourselves.
What? And have the interview come out dull? No, sir. These papers want color, kiddo. And I'm going to give them color.
Uh-oh, it's her, McGee. My yes. Goodness, I'm so. Come in.
How do you do? I'm Miss Clark from the Gazette.
Oh, come right in, Miss Clark. I'm Mrs. McGee, of course, and this is my husband, Mr. McGee. Dearie, here's Miss Clark. Dearie.
I didn't hear someone come in. Excuse me. What was that name again?
Clark. Clementine Clark. I hope I'm not interrupting.
Oh, not at all, Miss Clark. Expect me. Busy working on my novel and didn't hear you. You know how it is, working on a novel.
Oh, that's very interesting. What's the name of your book, Mr. McGee?
Well, that's the part he's working on. Let me have your things, Miss Clark.
Oh, thank you.
Now, you go right ahead and ask me questions, Miss Clark. I know you're anxious to know all about me, of course. Well, I was born in a little white house on the top of Kickapoo Hill just outside of Peoria, and there was...
If you don't mind, Miss McGee, I'd like to just visit with you and Mrs. McGee for a while. Just sort of get the atmosphere of your home.
Well, it'll be better as soon as he gets through with that cigar, Miss Clark. Huh? Throw it out, McGee.
What? Oh, well, I'll lay it on the ashtray. It'll go out itself.
I hope you'll just go ahead with your regular routine, both of you, with whatever you usually do. I'll tag along and write about it as I see it.
Okay, but don't be bashful about asking questions now. I can talk to you on any subject.
And he will, too.
Betcha. Art, literature, politics, diplomatics, world affairs.
Well, we're always interested in our readers' reactions to the European situation, Mr. McGee. I'd like to jot yours down. How do you feel about the Marshall Plan?
I'm glad you asked me that, Sis. I'm in favor of it. Yes, sir. The only way to buy things on credit is the Marshall Plan. I wouldn't go to any other finance...
Oh, no! No, dearie, that's the Morris Plan.
Oh, the Marshall Plan.
Sure, that's the plan for European relief.
Yes.
Oh, that Marshall Plan. Well, the way I look at it, Sis, if Marshall likes it, it's good enough for me.
Very nicely stated.
Yes, sir. Any guy that can make as much money in Wall Street as J.P. Marshall ought to know how to handle it.
I think you're thinking of J.P. Morgan, Miss McGee.
Oh, what did I say, Marshall?
I meant to say Morgan. A good man, Morgan. I'll vote for him. You can print that, sis.
I hope you wrote all that down, Miss Clark. I doubt if we could do it that way again. Say, would you like to come... I think that's Mr. Williams, McGee. Come in.
That's the weatherman, Mrs. Clark. Lives next door.
Hi, Foggy, old man.
Hello, Mr. Williams.
Hello, Mrs. McGee. And Mr. McGee. Well, Miss Clark.
How are you, Mr. Williams?
Oh, you two know each other, huh?
Oh, yes. We see each other at the Gazette.
Quite a surprise finding you here, though, Miss Clark. I thought you only interviewed people of interest. I thought you were doing stories about important... Hasn't the weather been lovely sometimes?
Miss Clark is going to do a story about us, Mr. Williams.
Yeah, did you ever have make the headlines yourself, Foggy?
Oh, yes, Mr. McGee. I remember it quite well.
Yeah?
I predicted rain 3 days in a row, and it rained every day.
Ah, that's awfully good predicting, Mr. Williams. You must have some wonderful instruments.
May I tell you a little secret?
Yeah.
My instruments were broken that week, and I called my shots for my uncle's rheumatism.
Nice running into you here, Mr. Williams. Have you lived next door to Miss McGee very long?
Why, let me see now. The first week I moved here, he borrowed my hammer and some shingle nails. The next week, shingles. Then there was the folding ruler and 8 feet of gas pipe week.
10 feet. I got another piece after you went to work.
Oh, pardon me. Then the snow shovel, lawnmower, and beach umbrella. The weather was uncertain that week.
I never take any chances.
Then there was the week he borrowed the rug out of the front hall.
Rug out of your hall? What on earth did
Well, I believe he wanted to get under his car to grease it, Mrs. McGee.
That's right. I had on a clean shirt. Of Foggy.
And the leg off our card table to replace one he broke on his own. That makes 10 weeks. Good heavens. Have I only been living next door for 10 weeks? Seems like... Well, I must get home and check my groundhog. Good day, probably.
Very nice chap. A little self-centered, of course, but quite nice. He keeps a groundhog. Oh, we got lots of friends.
Yes. Well, I'd like some information on...
Now you take Doc Gamble, for instance. He's a doctor. He's known me so long, he can't stand me. Very jealous type of guy. When he sees this big story on me in the paper tomorrow, boy, will he blow a fuse.
Yes. Mrs. McGee, suppose you tell me a little about yourself for a change. Just general information
me?
About...
Me? Oh. There isn't anything to tell about me, Miss Clark, really. I'm just a housewife.
Housewives are important, too, kiddo. Yes, sir, if it wasn't for you, I couldn't have done lots of the things I've done. Why, I mind one time...
Excuse me, Miss Clark. Come in.
Hello, Molly. Hi, pal.
Come in, Mr. Wilcox. Miss Clark, this is Mr. Wilcox. Mr. Wilcox, Miss Clementine Clark.
How do you do, Miss Clark?
Doing a story on us, Junior, for the Gazette. Feature article.
Oh, I've been reading your current series, Miss Clark. Very interesting.
Thank you. I'm just trying to get Mrs. McGee to give me an angle for her side of the story here. The housewife's angle is pretty important, you know.
It certainly is, and I'm happy to see it eliminated.
Eliminated?
What's eliminated, Mr. Wilcox?
The housewife's angle.
Huh?
You see, she used to be all bent over, scrubbing the kitchen linoleum.
Oh.
Now she just stands up straight, spreading Johnson's self-polishing glow coat around with a long-handled appliance. And watching it dry in 20 minutes or less to a brilliant, gleaming finish that keeps her linoleum much more beautiful with much less work and worry. You've discovered in your interviews, Miss Clark, that a housewife's very first interest is her home, of course.
Her home? How about her husband?
Well, he ought to be interested in it, too. He lives in it. And if a husband is interested in his home and in his wife, he won't let her keep house without Johnson's glow coat. When he sees the handsome, glistening finish of a glow-coated kitchen floor and the bright, happy sparkle it puts in the eyes of his wife, he'll insist she use Johnson's self-polishing glow coat always. He'd be a heel if he didn't.
Look, Omaha.
Yes, pal.
You've always been welcome here, haven't you?
Why, I think so, pal.
Well, let's not take any chances with a beautiful friendship, son. Nice to see you.
Oh, I see what you mean.
Yeah.
So long.
Goodbye.
Isn't he nice, Miss Clark?
Yes. What was he talking about, anyhow?
Search me, sis. He comes in here every week and goes on like that.
We think he's a salesman of some kind.
Yeah. See, now, where were we now? Oh, yeah. I was saying that writing, sports, art, and politics are just a few of my talents, sis. You see, I got what you might call many faucets to my personality.
You shouldn't let them all run at once, though. You're drowning us with talent.
Yes.
Now, I can spare it. Now, you take the other side of my character, the hard-headed businessman side. I've been...
Oh, recess again.
Oh, we have so many friends. I hope you don't mind. Come in.
Oh, hello, Mr. Boomer.
Greetings, my little prairie flower, and good day to you, Fiddlepage.
Hi,
who is this charming bit of fascinating femininity? Some woodland zephyr fluttering in on a vagrant breeze?
No, this is Miss Clark of the Gazette. Miss Clark, may I present Mr. Boomer?
How do you do?
Horatio K. Boomer, my dear, at your service. I shall spread my cloak at your dainty feet.
Cut it out, Boomer. She's a newspaper woman.
Miss Clark is writing a story about us for the Gazette, Mr. Boomer.
Well, very interesting, yes, indeed. I broke into the Gazette myself last week with a rather large article.
No kidding, what was the article about?
About the size and shape of a cobblestone, my boy. In fact, it was a cobblestone, now that I think of it. Slipped out of my hand and through a back alley window of the paper. I went in after it and was interviewed by three detectives. Never saw so many knuckles in one bunch.
What business are you in, Mr. Boomer?
He never answers that question without a flock of bright lights in his eyes and somebody shaking him.
Quiet, you insolent puppy! At the moment, my dear, I'm the sole local representative of the Ajax Little Gem Guaranteed Fruit Jar Opener. Guaranteed to open any jar with a simple twist of the wrist or your half dollar back.
Oh, really, Mr. Boomer? We always have trouble opening fruit jars.
Happy to show you a sample, my dear. Fruit jar opener, fruit jar now. What did I do with that opener? Here's an interesting photograph of my Uncle McIntosh, Boomer, playing the bagpipes with his trusty jug empty beside him. He was the original pie-eyed piper. Here's a turtleneck sweater knit by a girl with tortoiseshell glasses. Might have fit better if she'd used knitting needles.
Jar opener, Boomer, the opener, remember?
Yes, what do I do with that jar opener? Now, here's a fox choker for choking foxes. And he checked for the short beer. Well, what do you know? Here's the jar opener right here.
Why, in that package? Let's see it. Open it up.
Sorry, it's sealed for sanitary purposes, my boy.
Oh, well, how does it work, Boomer?
Very simple, Simon.
Yeah?
Inside this package, you'll find a brick bat.
Oh.
Simply take the jar, bat it with the brick, and it'll open like a fractured ball. Chop, 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 and so long, sob sister.
And the wallpaper here in the hall ties in with the color scheme in our bedroom, you see, Miss Clark.
Oh, the whole house is so nicely done, Mrs. McGee.
Well, thank you. And McGee wanted to do our room in rawhide with a moose head over the bed. But I managed to talk him out of
it. Well, did you see everything upstairs, sis?
Well, I have quite a lot of notes, Miss McGee.
Now, sit down here and I'll fill you in on my background while you're resting. You see, the way I figure one's background is everything. I come from a very old family myself.
Really?
Yeah. The last time I saw my family, there wasn't one of them under 65. And a happier bunch of hillbillies. Come in.
Oh, hello, Doug Dr. Gamble. It's nice to see you.
Hello, my dear. Hello, stupid. Oh, excuse me. Didn't know you had a guest.
This is Miss Clark from the Gazette, Dr. Whistle Vista Gazette. Dr. Gamble says.
How do you do, Doctor? I've heard a lot about you.
And I've been reading your articles, Miss Clark. Nice writing.
She's doing one on us for tomorrow, Doctor.
Yeah.
Well, if I can contribute anything to your notes about Mr. McGee...
No, never mind, Fatso, never mind. She's got all the dope right from the feed box. Just put your needle back in your satchel, Sawbones.
Why, my boy, I...
Some of my most interesting notes have come from your friends, Mr. McGee. Maybe Dr. Gamble...
Oh, no, you wouldn't be interested in Doc's cracks about me, sis. Probably couldn't print them anyway. Or spell them, even.
You know, they're such close friends, Miss Clark.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's all I can do to separate them from each other's throats.
I'd be very happy to give you my impression of him, Miss Clark. I've known him...
Now, cut it out, Doc. Skip it. She's got all the stuff she needs. You keep your big, fat prognosis out of this.
You mean his big, fat proboscis, McGee?
No, that too. Just ignore him, sis. Don't write anything down that he says.
Don't let his bluster frighten you, Miss Clark. That's just a cover-up. Underneath it, he's really a swell little guy.
Hmm. Who, me? Well, gee whiz.
Oh, he makes a few mistakes like we all do. But he tries hard and he does the very best he can with what he has to work with.
Thank you, Doctor. Did you write that down, sis?
I have it. That's nice, Doctor.
Of course, his biggest trouble is his modesty. It's just that he knows himself so well that he can't believe anyone could possibly have a good opinion of him. But someone does.
Thank you, Doctor.
No matter how big a problem that boy is faced with, Miss Clark, he always solves it. Yes, you give him a crisis and he'll beat it every time.
Thank you, Doctor.
You're still talking about McGee, Doctor?
I am indeed, my dear. While I grant that his veracity may sometimes be questioned, I consider it attributable to an overabundance of enthusiasm rather than to any inherent lack of fidelity to the truth. And his motivation is invariably above reproach.
Is that good, Molly? Thank you, Doctor.
Did you write that down, Miss Clark?
Yes. Thank you, Doctor.
Isn't that nice? I had no idea.
I've hardly touched the subject so far, but in closing, I'd just like to say that I like him.
Oh, sure.
In spite of all that lead, he's got a heart of gold.
Gee, Doc, that's swell. My gosh, I don't know what to say.
I hate to break this up, but I really must get down to the paper, Mrs. McGee.
Oh, don't rush away, Miss Clark. It's been awfully nice having you.
I've enjoyed knowing you, Mrs. McGee. If you'd call me a cab...
Oh, no, let me drop you off, Miss Clark. I'm driving downtown anyhow.
Yeah. Let Doc drive you down, sis. He may think of a few things he forgot on the way down. He'll drive her down, Doc.
Yeah.
Well, see you again, Mrs. McGee. Goodbye.
Goodbye. Goodbye, Doctor.
Yeah, talk to her, Doc. Drive slow. So long, sis. Story that'll make. They'll really give us a write up now. Good old Doc.
Wasn't he wonderful? Yeah. I've always said he was a sweet
kid. Boy, did he ever get in there and pitch. Boy, oh boy, I can hardly wait to see that paper. How long do we have to wait? The paper. Here's the paper. I run all the way back from Kramer's drugstore.
Well, quick, open it up.
Yeah.
What does it say? Have you found it? Let's see it.
Yeah, here it is. By Clementine Clark. It says, during a routine interview with a local couple yesterday, I met a most unusual personality. This prominent writer, artist, scientist, and physician is one of... Physician?
Physician? Why, that's about Dr. Gamble.
Well, why, the whole thing's about Doc Gamble. Don't say a word about us.
Heavenly Dick.
Why, that dirty. And I let him take her downtown. Why, that double-crossing, backstabbing, triple-dealing. Wait till I get my hands on him. What's his phone number?
Why, of all the dirty swindles. I'll get even with Doc Gamble if it's the last thing I... Hey, you know what I'll do?
Don't do it, dearie.
You haven't heard it yet.
I'm going down to the hospital tomorrow and tell Doc I want my tonsils took out, see?
What? Well, you had your tonsils out years ago, McGee.
Sure. And when he gets me on that table under that ether and looks down my neck and sees how I double-crossed him, boy, will he burn.
No, dear.
Okay. Good night.
Good night, all.
Now it's Our Miss Brooks, starring Eve Arden. Well, most rivalries between school teachers are restricted to working hours, but the one between Our Miss Brooks of Madison High School and Daisy Enright extends into their personal lives. In fact, to see these two English teachers engaged in one of their frequent verbal tiffs, a casual observer might think that either one would cheerfully cut the other's throat for a nickel. But this isn't so.
No, indeed. I'd give 4 cents change. And after what happened this past week, I might not even take the penny. It all started last Friday morning. I was in my room packing a suitcase for a little weekend trip, and my landlady was helping me. Mrs. Davis, Mr. Boynton's going to Eagle Springs for the weekend, so I thought it was only logical for me to go to the same place.
Does he know you're going?
Nobody knows.
Why not?
Security reasons. I want to spend these few days with Mr. Boynton alone, and if Daisy Enright finds out our destination, that little dream is done for.
You mean she'd go up to Eagle Springs, too?
On her jet broom. She's giving me some real competition lately. She has a certain way with men that just seems to make them do whatever she wants them to. Why, even Mr. Conklin's partial to her.
That's nothing new. I've known for a long time that she's the principal's pet.
Well, I wish he'd keep her on a leash. The minute there's a chance to make a bit of extra money around school, she's the first one to get a crack at it. He even put her in charge of the new switchboard we had installed last week.
But doesn't that require an experienced telephone operator?
They're pretty difficult to get right now, so she's filling in temporarily. She takes the board herself during her free period and appoints various other teachers to take over the rest of the time. What burns me up is the way she got the job, by telling Mr. Conklin she worked for the phone company when she was a girl. What a fish story that is. Oh, there's Walter Denton to drive me to school. Be right there, Walter.
Before you go, Connie, tell me, why do you think it's a fish story?
Because when she was a girl, the telephone hadn't been invented. Walter, please. There's no law that says we can't use all four tires going around a corner. Now, slow down a little.
1,000 pardons, dear teacher. Now, frankly, I'm barely conscious of the speed with which we are traversing this mundane sphere. It is only the corporeal Walter Denton who is restricted to the confines of this vehicle. The spiritual me is floating in the heavenly blue on silver wings.
Well, bail out, cherub. I'm not ready for harp lessons. What's the reason for this pedestrian-destroying ecstasy?
It's Harriet Conklin, Miss Brooks. She's been treating me like an angel lately. Last night when her folks were out visiting, she even cooked dinner for me. Gosh, it was romantic.
What did you have?
Liver and onions.
Truly the food of love.
To be honest, I was so grateful I barely felt the heartburn. But all isn't beer and Skittles. As much as Harriet adores me, that's how much her father hates the sight of me.
Oh, don't tell me you're having trouble with Mr. Conklin again.
Oh, no. No more than usual. Now, I wrote an editorial in the Monitor a couple of days ago that Mr. Conklin didn't agree with. You see, in it, I said I was opposed to hiring a permanent substitute for one of our German teachers.
Which one?
Wolfgang Himmelstoss. He's the nice old fellow who's been sick for the past week.
Oh, I wouldn't know. Wolfgang isn't one of my intimates at school.
Well, the other teachers have been sharing his duties so far, but I heard that Mr. Conklin's looking for a younger teacher to take over his class. That means when Mr. Himmelstoss gets better, he won't have a job.
Well, it's nice of you to be so loyal to an old teacher, Walter.
Oh, I'd feel the same way about you, Miss Brooks, and I'd go to bat for you, too. That's why you've got to go to bat for Mr. Himmelstoss.
Me?
Certainly. Now, how would you like it if you were a worn-out, old, lonely, broken-down bachelor?
I'm getting used to it. I mean, how can I help Mr. Himmelstoss?
Well, by mentioning to Mr. Conklin that you don't think he should replace him. Will you, Miss Brooks? Will you do that for me and for all the kids who've grown so fond of Mr. Himmelstoss? Will you, Miss Brooks, huh? Will you, huh?
Well...
Boy, that's a relief. Well, now that you've promised, my mind's at ease. That's one thing about you, boy. Once you make a promise, a guy doesn't have to worry about a thing. He can rest assured that you'll keep your word or die in the attempt. Yes, sir.
Huh? Good morning, Harriet.
Oh, good morning, Miss Brooks. I have a message for you.
I know. Your father wants to see me in his office immediately.
No, Miss Enright wants to see you in the faculty room. This one on your left.
Well, if it isn't the mumps, it's the measles. Well, I might as well find out what's on her frightening little mind. I'll see you in class, Harriet.
Bye-bye, Miss Brooks.
Toodle. Miss Enright?
Oh, come in, darling. My, you're looking lovely this morning. I'm mad about that dress you're wearing. It does so much to bring out your natural lines.
Really?
Yes. Especially the ones around your eyes. Well, but then there's no time for chit-chat. Miss Brooks, we've got to sit down and have a real heart-to-heart talk.
All right. Borrow a heart and let's get started.
I'll ignore that remark because there's too much at stake to bicker. Now, we're both aware of the fact that we're interested in the same man, and each one of us has been keeping extremely close tabs on him. For instance, I heard that he's going to spend the weekend at Eagle Springs.
Eagle Springs? Mm-hmm. Well, now, who could have started such a ridiculous rumor?
Mr. Boynton told me himself.
He's the logical one to start it all.
I also have a hunch that we were both going to surprise him by showing up at the same place.
Why, Miss Enright, wherever did you get such a fantastic notion?
I've got my train ticket and a bag in my locker. Where are yours?
I'm picking them up after school. Well, suppose we did have the same idea.
Oh, don't you see, Miss Brooks, with such an elusive query, we've got to be more cagey. I'm sure that Mr. Boynton sees some good points in both of us, but the way we've been going about things, we're only hurting each other's chances.
Miss Enright, you may have something there.
Yes.
But what do you suggest?
That one of us step out of the picture completely for a specified amount of time and leave the other a clear field.
How much time, for instance?
Well, how about a couple of months?
Fine. See you in January, Miss Enright.
Not so fast. We'll decide who's going to remove herself first in a sportsmanlike manner. Say, by dealing a hand of cards.
A hand of cards?
Yes. You know, some of us play bridge during lunch hour, and I just happen to have a deck in my handbag. You have the nerve to go through with it?
Nerve? Sit down and deal, Miss Enright. What kind of a game shall we play?
Well, do you know poker?
I've heard of it.
Fine. Then I'll deal one hand of draw poker, and the loser agrees to stay away from Mr. Boynton for a period of 2 months, commencing at once, right?
Right.
Fine. All right. Here we are. Now, you care to cut the deck?
Run 'em.
One, two, three, four, five. Now, how many cards do you want, Miss Brooks?
Let's see. I'll take 4. How about you?
I'll play these. What have you got, Miss Brooks?
A pair of 10s.
Oh, no good. I've got 4 aces.
4 aces? Well, that's that.
Oh, I'm glad you're taking it like a good sport, Miss Brooks. May I walk to your class with you?
Sure, if you don't mind climbing 4 flights.
4 flights, but your classroom's on the first floor.
I know, but who ever heard of jumping from a first floor window?
A
determined to live up to my bargain with Miss Enright and sever all relations with the bashful biologist. As I approached our usual table in the cafeteria at lunchtime, I resolved to get it over with as quickly and painlessly as possible. Mr. Boynton?
Yes?
Goodbye.
Goodbye. You're going somewhere, Miss Brooks?
Yes, out of your life. Goodbye.
Well, no, just a moment. What on earth are you talking about?
It's just that I got to thinking about our relationship, Mr. Boynton, and I've come to the conclusion that it's best for both of us if we don't see each other for a while.
But why, Miss Brooks? How did you come to that conclusion? I know. I did something.
When? Oh, no, Mr. Boynton. It's nothing you've done. It's not going to be easy, of course. We've had some memorable times together. Those exciting nights when we strolled through the zoo. Those long walks past the aquarium and those evenings under the stars. Just you and me in the planetarium. But now that I've made my decision, all that seems aces ago. Ages ago.
Look, Miss Brooks, I think we should talk this over. I haven't picked up my train ticket to Eagle Springs yet. I was going to phone in my reservation after school, but I don't have to go up there this weekend.
Oh, yes, you do, Mr. Boynton. If I'm going to be a good sport, you've got to go. This is goodbye. Please don't make it any harder.
That's the way you really feel about it. I don't suppose...
That's the way I feel. Just give me one long, lingering kiss, and I'll go.
Kiss?
Okay, what's your next best offer? I just thought that since we've always been such good friends, we should part as good friends do.
Hmm? Well, I guess I could kiss you goodbye if you want to.
I want. Well, I'm all puckered, Mr. Boynton. Oh, eyes closed and puckered.
Cooling soup, Miss Brooks? You'll excuse me, sir. I've got to get some sherbet. I said I'd pick it up before it got cold. See you later, Miss Brooks.
He's a little nervous today.
Miss Brooks, what was the meaning of that hideous osculatory display I was about to witness?
I was just saying goodbye to Mr. Boynton, sir. He's going away, and I...
Goodbye? You looked like a sea lion about to play Yankee Doodle on a calliope. The idea of kissing in a public school cafeteria. Is that what the Board of Education pays you for, Miss Brooks?
If it is, they haven't been getting their money's worth.
Don't be insolent. To think that in one English department I should have two such extremes in teachers as Miss Enright and you. The one alert, calm, efficient. The other an emotional, mooning, lovesick cocker spaniel.
Oh, I don't know. Maybe it's just the way her ears flop down that make Miss Enright look bad.
You know whom I meant, Miss Brooks. Sometimes I don't know what I'd do without Miss Enright. In addition to her duties as an English teacher, she has recently taken over the operation of our new switchboard.
Yes, I know, sir. She's very clever.
Plus which, just a few moments ago, she solved another problem for me. She has suggested a teacher to take Mr. Himmelstoss's place.
But Mr. Himmelstoss is perfectly capable of taking his own place. I mean, when he gets better, he'll be completely well. That is, everybody's so attached to him, Mr. Conklin, and he's quite old.
That's just it. Miss Schmerzenfelder is young.
Well, I don't care how you... Miss Schmerzenfelder?
I'm phoning her this afternoon to make an appointment. Miss Enright speaks very highly of her. Now, stand aside, please. Your sentimental pleading cannot stay me from my rendezvous with some meatballs. And watch that fraternization, Miss Glad Eye.
Yes, sir. Glad Eye. I'll bet that Miss Schmerzenfelder walks with a goose step. It's just not fair.
Do you mind if I join you, Miss Brooks? I've been talking to myself too lately.
Sit down, Walter. What's your trouble?
Your old marblehead. Mr. Conklin's had me on cleanup detail during my free period. Yeah, it's usually pretty dull work, but I just found something quite interesting in a trash basket in the faculty room.
What is it?
Well, this deck of cards. See?
Well, those are the cards Miss Enright and I used this morning.
What? You played her with these? Oh, but this is a trick deck, Miss Brooks. She could clobber you with these.
She did clobber me. What do you mean by trick deck?
It's stacked. Did she beat you for much, Miss Brooks?
Just about 2 months of my life. But, Walter, I think I've got an idea. Excuse me, please.
Where are you going, Miss Brooks?
I'm going to see a floppy-eared spaniel about a man.
Well, you are being a good sport, Miss Brooks. This being my free period, I was about to take over the switchboard myself.
Oh, think nothing of it, Miss Enright. I'll be happy to take over for you. I know how rushed you must be, particularly if you want to make that 4:30 train.
Oh, yes, it's the only one up to Eagle Springs today. But you're sure you know how to handle a switchboard, Miss Brooks?
Miss Enright, I worked on the board of a summer resort for an entire summer when I was in my teens.
And you learned everything?
On a resort switchboard? That was the summer I grew up.
Well, I guess there's no sense in looking a gift horse in the mouth. Figuratively speaking, of course.
Oh, that's all right. Slip me the earphones and call me Native Dancer.
Well, very well. I'm off to the country. Remember now, I have quite a reputation for efficiency with Mr. Conklin.
Don't you worry about that, Miss Enright. I'll take care of your duties and your reputation. But good. This switchboard is a pretty complicated gadget. Thank goodness there haven't been any caught. Uh-oh. There goes one of the lights now. Oh, it's pretty. I guess I plugged this cord in under it. Madison High School?
Would you connect me with Harriet Conklin, please? She's in the home economics class.
I'd love to, Walter.
Miss Brooks, what are you doing there? Isn't Miss Enright at the switchboard?
Not unless she sneaked in under me. Now, you wanted the home economics class. I wonder which hole I plug in for that.
Don't you know?
Well, they all look alike to me. Oh, there's another call. Hold it, Walter. I'll have to get back to you. Madison High School?
Hello. Would you connect me with Miss Brooks, please?
Oh, hello, Mrs. Davis. This is Miss Brooks.
My, I got through to you fast. Whoever's on that switchboard must really know her business.
I'm on the switchboard. What can I do for you?
I just wanted to know whether or not I should...
Oh, excuse me a minute, Mrs. Davis. There's another call coming in. Hang on. Good afternoon, Madison High School.
Oh, good afternoon. Would you put me through to the railroad station, please? This is Mr. Boynton.
The railroad station, Mr. Boynton?
Yes. Is this Miss Brooks?
That's right.
Wasn't Miss Enright there?
Maybe I'd better stand up and look. No, sir, I'm in charge of the board now. I'll connect you with the station in one moment, as soon as I can disguise my voice.
Hello? Hello? Is this the railroad station?
It sure is, Doc. What can I do for you?
I'd like to reserve a ticket to Eagle Springs today.
Eagle Springs? Aren't any trains running to Eagle Springs today. It's snowed in. Goodbye.
Now to get back to Mrs. Davis. Hello, Mrs. Davis?
No, this is Walter. Could I speak to Harriet, please?
Any day now, Walter. Hold it. Hello, Mrs. Davis?
Yes, dear. What I wanted to ask you...
Oh, just a moment, Mrs. Davis. There goes another light. Hello?
Oh, hello, Miss Brooks. This is Mr. Boynton. I didn't get that railroad ticket yet. Some nitwit at the station said Eagle Springs was snowed in. Oh, would you try the Weather Bureau for me?
Oh, all right, Mr. Boynton, but you'll have to wait a moment.
Hello? Would you connect me with Walter Denton in shop class, please? This is Harriet Conklin.
Oh, hello, Harriet. This is Miss Brooks. Walter's been trying to get you.
Well, where is he?
Well, he's somewhere on this board. I'll try to plug you in. Zowie, 5 lights in a row. Board's beginning to look like a pinball machine. Hello?
Hello. Osgood Conklin speaking.
Tilt. How are you, Mr. Conklin? This is Miss Brooks.
On the switchboard? Has Miss Enright taken leave of her senses?
No, sir, just of Madison. She's gone away for the weekend, and I'm pitching in.
Oh, well, I'm calling Miss Schmerzenfelder. Her number's Maine 8493.
Yes, sir, right away. Now, let's see, which hole do I plug for an outside line? I'll try this one. Hello?
Hello, Miss Brooks. Can I speak to Harriet, please?
Oh, didn't you get her, Walter?
No, he didn't get her. But we've been having a delightful conversation.
Who's we?
Walter, Mrs. Davis, and me, Miss Brooks.
Mr. Boynton, too? I must have put you all on the wrong line. Ah, here we are.
Confound it, Miss Brooks. Where's my number?
Well, Mr. Conklin, fancy meeting you again. I'll get Miss Schmerzenfelder for you right now, sir. If I can do a decent German accent. Oh, here's Miss Schmerzenfelder now, Mr. Conklin.
Hello, Miss Schmerzenfelder?
Yeah, this is Miss Schmerzenfelder. Who is das?
Das is Mr. This is Mr. Conklin, principal of Madison High School.
Oh, Herr Conklin. Yeah.
Yes. Well, I'm calling about that teaching position that's open in Madison's German department. Miss Enright recommended you in the highest possible terms.
Oh, danke schön. Yeah, I'm the best German teacher in the whole entire ganze Welt. That's the whole world to you. Daisy and I taught together in two or three high schools, you know.
Two or three high schools?
Yeah, the first principal was crazy about the way I taught. That wasn't the reason I was fired.
Fired?
I would still be there if he hadn't found the schnapps in the coat room.
You mean you'd been drinking?
Just a bissel between classes. But I give that all up, Mr. Conklin.
Oh, but what about your last position?
Oh, I wasn't canned on account of my teaching.
Then why did the principal let you go?
The silliest reason. Oh, the silliest reason. How was I to know he didn't like crap games in the elevator?
But this is incredible. Miss Enright spoke of you so highly.
Yeah, it's too bad she couldn't say the same about you. What a temper she said you got. She said, du bist verrückt. That's nuts to you.
Miss Enright said that? Why, there isn't a word of truth in it. I'm essentially a very mild-mannered man. Anyone who knows me could vouch for that.
Of course they could, Osgood.
What's that? Is there someone else on this line?
Oh, I'm sorry, Mr. Conklin. I must have put Mrs. Davis on by mistake.
Oh, Dad, of all the stupid, idiotic teachers...
Boss is das.
No, not you, Miss Schmerzenfelder, no.
Miss Enright was right. Du bist verrückt. Auf Wiedersehen, Mr. Conklin.
No. Miss Schmerzenfelder, I'm talking about the other teacher on this line.
Well, I hardly think that's any way to talk about me, Mr. Conklin.
Boys, what are you doing on this line?
Hey, he's waiting to speak to Harriet. Oh, no, that was Mrs. Davis.
What?
Could I speak to Harriet, please, Miss Brooks?
I knew there was someone waiting to speak to her.
Here I am, Walter, dear.
Oh, what do you know? They finally got together.
Miss Brooks, I don't know who is more to blame for this fiasco, you or Miss Enright. I'll deal with her when I see her. But how do you propose to straighten out the tangle you've gotten this switchboard into?
Don't worry, Mr. Conklin. I've got one more line that's still free, and I know just what I'm going to do with it.
What?
Hang myself. What else?
And now, here's the star of our show, Eve Arden.
Well, we finally got our lines untangled, though I'm still not sure how.
Brooks, starring Eve Arden, transcribed, was produced and directed by Larry Burns, written by Arthur Olsberg and Al Lewis, with the music of Lud Bluskin. Mr. Conklin was played by Gail Gordon. Others in tonight's cast were Jane Morgan, Dick Crenna, Bob Rockwell, Gloria McMillan, and Mary Jane Croft.
this same time and over this same station, Eve Arden, in the role of Madison High School's favorite English teacher, Miss Brooks, will again call the student body together. Don't you be absent. Our Miss Brooks is presented each week through the worldwide facilities of the United States Armed Forces Radio and Television Service.
Ladies and gentlemen, the secret word tonight is door. D-O-O-R.
Really?
You bet your life! The DeSoto Plymouth Dealers of America present Groucho Marx in You Bet Your Life, the comedy quiz series produced and transcribed from Hollywood. And here he is, the one, the only...
Groucho! He's the egg the Easter Bunny brought. Oh, that's me, Groucho Marx. Thank you. Well, here I am again with $1,500 for one of our couples. George Fenneman, who gets first crack at all that money?
We invited some steel workers and some ice men to the program tonight. And just before we went on the air, our studio audience selected Iceman Ray Morgan and Steelman Dan Daniel. Gentlemen, meet Groucho Marx.
Welcome, boys, for the DeSoto Plymouth Dealers. And if one of you says the secret word, you divide $100 in cash. It's a common word, something you see every day. Mr. Ray Morgan, you're the Iceman?
Yes, sir.
Mm-hmm. Where do you work?
Work the Union Ice Company in Hollywood.
What do you do?
Oh, we make and deliver ice.
Oh. Well, how do you make ice?
Oh, we put water in tanks.
You're welcome, huh? You're sort of an American institution, aren't you? How many housewives still look forward to the Iceman every morning?
Oh, thousands of them.
Thousands? How many of them take ice?
Most of them.
Now, Mr. Daniel, what sort of work do you do?
Steel worker.
You work at Steely? You mean you're a crook? Now, why do you commit all this larceny?
U.S. Steelworks.
U.S. Steelworks?
Yes, sir.
Are you married?
Yes, sir.
How'd you meet your wife? Did you steal her, too? Or...
Well, I met her on a blind date. I had a date with her sister, and I went out, and the fellows had me tangled up, and they tangled the girls up, and
what?
I met... They tangled the girls up, and I get the one I was supposed not to get, and the one that I got, I got. I married a girl.
You could work for the State Department. What is your job as a steel worker?
I'm an open hearth operator.
Open heart?
I help the melter.
You help the melter, huh? At the smelter?
No, there's no smelter.
That's only when the melter's in a swelter at the smelter, is that? Why don't you have a smelter?
We don't have any pig iron.
Well, if you don't have any pig iron, obviously you have no use for a smelter, eh? Why don't you have pig iron?
We don't have any iron ore.
Iron ore what, huh? Iron ore hogs, or... Now, what do you do? How do you help the melter?
I help him charge the furnace.
Why does he charge the furnace? Why doesn't he pay cash for it? What do you charge the furnace with, salsa?
The scrap, well, the charging ram.
You mean you have a trained goat? Now, start from the beginning, will you?
Well, the scrap is brought up and charging buggies, and we use the ram.
Brought up in what?
In charging buggies.
Charging buggies?
Yeah.
What is a charging buggy? I never heard
That's
of
electrically
that.
Operated ram.
Oh. Well, you're saying you got my goat. I don't know about that. Okay, now you got. Now what happens?
Well, I help the. That's where I come in, really, as a first helper. When we charge the furnace, well, I take over there and melt this scrap down.
Where does the word pig come from in connection with this?
Well,
You have to be hammy to make it, or?
Well, that's good, Ann.
Frankly, you don't know. Is that it, huh?
That's right.
You've been shoveling that Schweiner eye into that finus all these years. And you're having the faintest idea why it's called pig iron, huh?
I know why it's called pig iron. It's
why?
Called put in a trough and...
Put in a trough?
Yes,
oh,
it's
no.
Put in a trough and cool down.
And the pig goes for the trough, is that it? Now, Rusty, if you had to do it all over again, would you go back into the steel business?
Yes, Mr. Marks,
why,
I would.
Why would you?
Well,
I know the pig iron. I know that.
Well, everything...
It goes in the trough, huh?
Everything that we have today is basically steel. Not everything, but
not,
most
not,
of it.
Not French pastry.
Well, steel is something that's here to stay, and all of these fine cars is made of the best steel, and you just can't get rid of it. Once that's the truth. 23 years for U.S. Steel, and it's been a fine company to work for.
Yeah.
That's true.
I hear they haven't got a quarter, huh? Well, let's forget about America's industry for now. In just 1 minute, you're going to work together for a chance at $1,500, which is more important.
When you stop in at any of the more than 3,000 DeSoto Plymouth dealers, it makes no difference how big or how small the service job to be done. The important thing is, these dealers appreciate your call. And to prove it, they make it their business to please you in every way they can. To do this, they offer you the benefit of not only the best tools and equipment, not only the factory-trained mechanics, but they offer you courtesy and a fair deal. Being courteous and thoughtful, being fair and square is their creed, their way of doing business. So, wherever you drive, remember, across this nation are more than 3,000 DeSoto Plymouth dealers, each with an honest desire to serve you. And remember, all dealers who sell DeSoto also sell Plymouth.
Let's see if you two will get a chance at the $1,500. Fenneman, bring them up to date on the rules.
Each of our three couples has $20. They bet as much of that $20 as they want on each of four questions. The couple that earns the most money gets a chance at the DeSoto Plymouth $1,500 question at the end of the show. Our other two couples are in a waiting room offstage, so they don't know what's happening out here.
Here we go. Let's see how high I can build you $20. You selected sports personalities as your category. Is that right? Now, you have $20. Here's your first question. How much of the $20 will you bet?
$5.
In what sport is Sam Snead famous?
Golf.
Golf is right.
They have $25 now.
Remember, you're going for $1,500 tonight. How much of the $25 would you try?
Let's take $15 this time.
Okay.
$15.
Doesn't agree with him. He's liable to hit him over the head with an ingot. In what sport is Jack Kramer famous?
Tennis.
Tennis is right.
They're climbing ground, so they have $40.
All right, you got $40. Here's, how much you going to bet on this one? Here's your third question. How much of the $40?
$30.
$30. In what sport is Johnny Longdon famous?
Horse racing.
Horse racing is right.
They're really climbing now. They have $70.
All right, now you got $70. Now, how much of the $70 you going to try?
Sure, $70.
$70 you going to bet? In what sport is Ralph Kiner famous?
Baseball
is right.
And they wind up with a grand total of $140.
Thanks and good luck from the DeSoto Plymouth dealer. Stick around now. You may get the chance at the big question.
Groucho, the secret word is still door. Perhaps the next couple will say it. Just before we went on the air, our studio audience selected a baby photographer and a young mother, and here they are, Mrs. Linda Sutton and Mr. Newell Morris. Meet Groucho Marx.
Welcome to You Bet Your Life, folks. And if one of you says the secret word at any time, you divide $100 between you. It's a common word, something you use, you see every day. Well, let's see here. Mr. Newell Morris, that must be you, huh? Baby photographer. Where are you from, baby?
I'm a native.
How many babies do you photograph on an average day?
Oh, I snap around 10 or 15.
You go around snapping at babies? Well, at least you're a candid photographer. And Miss Linda Sutton, huh? A very pretty name and a very pretty girl, huh? Have you always been this pretty?
Ask my mother.
Well, drag her out, I will. Where are you from, Mrs. Sutton?
I'm from outside of Boston.
Where is outside of Boston?
Well, I'm just on the edge of the Cape.
Well, I got you don't fall off, huh? You're a young mother, is that right?
That's right.
How old are you, Linda?
I'm 27.
And how old is your baby?
Well, they were here, Christmas Day. I have twins,
boys. You have twins, huh? And how old is your husband?
He's 28.
28? You know what a steel ingot is, huh? You say your husband is in the steel business?
No, he's a lineman for the telephone company.
Which phone company does he work for?
Well, there's only one.
No, that's not true. There are many phone companies. You ought to have your husband wise you up to some of these things. Can't just go on having twins, you know. There are other... In other words, he works for AT&T, is that it? How'd you meet him?
Oh, I met him. I was fishing for eels.
And that's the best you could do?
I come from a family of six. I'm the only girl. I have five brothers. And they're always my big brother.
Well, thanks for the warning, Mr. Sutton.
My big brother was going to... It was
just how big is your big brother?
Well, I have five. Any size you want, I got them.
Now then, we were on the eels, huh?
Well, my mother wanted us to go get some eels, not to eat, but just to feed our cats. We had nine cats.
Nine cats and only five brothers? That isn't even two cats apiece.
Well, anyway, my brother took me along so I could watch my little brother. Because as soon as I got there, my big brother went away. I think he went talking to some girls or something. So,
Really?
Then my other brother...
You mean he preferred girls to eels? Can't be much of a man, that fella.
And he came back in a little while, and he had this other fellow with him. And he says, hey, sis, this is Sutton. So he reached into the bucket that he had, and he pulled out this great big long eel, and he threw it at me. And I guess he meant me to catch it, but anyway, it hit me right in the face.
Is that considered romance in Massachusetts? Has strange customs in New England. Anyway. Slapping a girl in the kisser with an eel, I never thought of. It was just the right way to get introduced to a girl. Huh? Do you work, Mrs. Sutton?
Well, yes, I do. I have a part-time job as a chocolate dipper.
I beg your pardon. Why did you say you dip?
Chocolates.
You dip chocolates? Dip them in what?
Chocolate. I work with nuts. You take three nuts...
Mr. Sutton, don't think that I don't. I've worked with more nuts than you'll ever see. A girl tells me that she gets married because somebody slapped her in the kisser with an eel. Well, are you... Mister, I've been neglecting you, Mister. This was such a fascinating saga of love in New England that I just couldn't get away from it. You say you're a baby photographer, Mr. Morris?
That's right.
How do you go about taking a baby's picture?
Well, if they're about 12 pounds, well, you prop them up on a pillow to start.
But if they're under 12, what do you do, throw them back? Are babies like adults in that you can occasionally have to retouch babies' pictures?
Oh, yes, you occasionally retouch babies.
Well, how do you do it, huh?
Well, you have to take out the bags under their eyes and stray hair.
You mean those kids have bags under their eyes? That's what they get for staying up all night, huh? Getting the bottle. A lot of those kids are old soaks. Who takes the pictures in your family, you or your husband?
Well, I take them of him, and he takes them of me.
Well, that's the only way you can do it, huh? Unless you have arms 8 feet long. Well, who takes the best pictures, you or your husband?
Well, I do. The pictures he takes, they don't look like me.
What do you mean they don't look like you?
Well, last summer he took a picture of me in a bathing suit and didn't look like me at all.
Were you underwater at the time? What was the matter with the picture?
It was too light.
Give us the lowdown, Mr. Morris. What was the matter with the picture of Mrs. Sutton?
Must have been an overexposure.
Maybe that's why she was under the water. Well, I know all about snapping at babies. Now, let's see how snappy you two are with your answers. You're going to play your bet your life for the chance at $1,500, the DeSoto Plymouth question. You're on your $20 and the more than the other couples, and you get a chance at the big question. I can't tell you how much our first couple won, but Fenneman is offstage to remind our listeners.
The Iceman and the steel worker earned $140.
Here we go. Let's see how high I can build you $20. You selected capitals of states as your category. Is that right? Now, you got $20. How much are you going to risk?
15.
What is the capital of Kentucky?
Frankfurt.
Frankfurt is right.
On their way, they have $35.
How much of the 35 will you try?
30.
What's the capital of South Dakota?
Pierre.
Pierre is right.
They're starting to climb. They have $65.
How much are you going to try?
60.
60. You don't care what he says anymore. What is the capital of Vermont?
Montpelier.
Montpelier is right. In New England, go ahead.
Now I have $125.
No kissing until the show is over. Huh?
The whole thing.
Okay.
Shoot it.
Rackaroon here, huh? You've got $125 and you're going to try for this one. What is the capital of North Dakota?
Bismarck.
Bismarck is right.
And they wind up a grand total of $250.
Thanks and good luck from the DeSoto Plymouth dealers. Now, we'll soon know who gets the chance at the $1,500 question.
And now, a word from the more than 3,000 DeSoto Plymouth dealers.
Just a minute, Fenneman. If each dealer has a word, that'll be 3,000, and this is only a half-hour program.
Well, Groucho, actually, words can't do justice to the skilled service you get when you drive your car in to an authorized DeSoto Plymouth dealer's place of business.
In that case, this is the only program in radio that doesn't need an announcer.
What I mean, Groucho, is that one must experience how the skilled DeSoto Plymouth mechanics working with the finest equipment can save time and money on your car.
One must experience. Shouldn't we try to get a few more people into the DeSoto Plymouth dealers? Maybe three or four?
Oh, you know what I mean.
So does everybody else. So on with the show. Who's ahead in the battle for the $1,000?
The housewife and the baby photographer are leading with $250.
And the secret word is still door. We invited some Belgian war brides and their ex-GI husbands to the show tonight. And just before we went on the air, our studio audience selected Mr. and Mrs. Chico Tellez. Folks, meet Groucho Marx.
Welcome, youngsters, for the DeSoto Plymouth dealers. And if you say the secret word while we're talking, you'll win $100. It's a common word, something you see every day. Mrs. Tellez, is that the way you pronounce it?
That's right.
Tellez, huh? You're a Belgian war bride. Where are you from?
I'm from Belgium.
Just what I suspected, huh? I mean, what part of Belgium are you from?
From Molenbeek Saint-Jean.
Is that anywhere near Brussels?
Well, you know, in a country so small, most anything would be close to Brussels.
Oh, I don't know. How about Detroit? That's pretty far from Brussels.
Yeah, I guess so.
You're the Belgian war groom, I presume, eh? Chico?
No, I'm
Say,
not.
I used to have a brother named Chico.
It wasn't me.
It wasn't you.
Oh.
Could be. Chico Telez, huh? What kind of a name is that? That's not a Belgian name, huh? What nationality is
it? It's a Spanish name.
Where are you from?
Mexico.
I suppose you were married in Hungary, huh? What kind of work do you do, Chico? Are you in love happy?
I'm a student at Art Center and I'm a photographer.
What sort of work did you do in Belgium before you were captured by Chico here?
I was secretary.
You were a secretary?
Mm-hmm.
What were you doing for Uncle Sam when you met Lillian?
I was in the Signal Corps in the photographic section. In the army, of course.
Yeah. Were you right up front?
Naturally, I couldn't get out of there.
Do you have any little Brussels sprouts, Lillian?
Brussels. No, not yet.
Not yet. You have a delightful accent, Lillian. You speak English very well for a while.
Thank you.
How long did it take you to learn it?
About 3 years.
3 years. Very quick to learn. Do you speak any other languages?
Yes, French and German.
I speak a number of languages myself, you know. Should we have a little conversation in Belgium?
In what?
In Belgium. Just you and I, yeah?
In Belgium? That would be impossible.
Don't you speak Belgian?
Nobody speaks Belgian. There isn't such a language.
Well, frankly, I don't speak it very well myself. Why don't the Belgians have a tongue of their own?
That's because there are two types of people in Belgium.
Men and women?
No, that's not what I mean.
They don't have men and women in Belgium?
Yes, they do.
You better clear up this whole thing, Lillian.
Well, yeah, they have men and women, all right. But what I mean by two types is that they have Walloon and Flemish people, and they both have a different language, see?
Well, could you say something in Flemish? Could you tell me a short joke?
Well, I'm from the French part. I don't know Flemish very well.
Could you tell me a short joke in French?
In French?
Yeah.
Yes, I could.
What's that one?
You mean in French right away like that?
Mom? Yeah, and then tell me what it means.
Oh! I guess I can get away with it. Well,
Well, clean it up a little, will you?
Connaissez-vous l'histoire du monsieur qui fut réveillé à 3 heures du matin par le téléphone à 3 heures du matin et il se rendit compte que c'était le mauvais numéro. Alors le monsieur à l'autre bout de la ligne s'excuse de ce que ce soit le mauvais numéro et de ce qu'il est dérangé. Alors il dit, oh, ça ne fait rien, de toute façon je devais me lever pour répondre au téléphone.
Chico, did you understand that?
Oui, monsieur.
He's really a brilliant linguist, isn't he? Well, Chico, explain. And would you explain in English what she just told in French?
I think she can explain it better.
Well, you, Lillian, he's shoving it over on you,
yes,
huh?
Yes, yeah.
You tell me what you said, huh? Something about the telephone, I guess.
Yeah, there was something about it. Well, it's all about a telephone, in fact.
The what?
Well, it's about a story of the man that was awakened by the telephone ringing at 3 o'clock in the morning. And so he went to answer it, you know, and he found out it was the wrong number. So the man at the other line excused himself and apologized because he had, you know, waking him up. So he said, oh, it's all right, you're perfectly excused. I had to get out anyhow get up anyhow to answer the phone, see? So...
Well, if Leopold is smart, he'll never come back to Belgium. Now that you've lived in California, Lillian, what do you think of Americans? And speak frankly. I'll probably go to jail, but it'll be worth it. Huh?
Oh, you won't go to jail for what I say.
No. Well, no. How do American men compare with Belgian men as husbands?
Well, they're very different. Very different. You see, a Belgian husband is, he has an air of superiority, and he doesn't want to help his wife in the housework or anything like that, and he's just a boss, you know, that's all.
Mm-hmm. And which system do you prefer?
Oh, I think America is a wonderful country for women.
And that's just who it belongs to, too. Chico, you were a sucker. You never should have left Belgium. Well, it's really been very interesting having you both here tonight, and I wish you a long and happy married life. Now, you're going to try for a chance at the $1,500 question. Beat the other two couples, and you win the chance at all that money. I can't tell you how much our other two couples won, but Fenneman's going to remind our listeners.
The housewife and the baby photographer are ahead with $250.
Here we go. Let's see how high I can build you $20. You selected composers of operas as your category.
Yes.
All right. Now you have $20. How much are you going to try?
Well, we don't want...
$10. Is that all right, Chico?
I suppose so.
All right. Who is the composer of Carmen?
Alim.
Ambroise Thomas? No. I got it wrong.
No, I... I'm sorry, it was Bizet.
Oh, yes.
They now have $10.
You were too Bizet to remember that. That's it. Well, now you've only got $10. Remember, you're going for $1,500 tonight. Now, how much of the $10 will you try?
$5.
$5. Who is the composer of Lohengrin?
That's a good question.
Wait. Can I see it?
Wagner is right.
Well, they're gaining their money back. They now have $15.
Chico, that was not only a good question, that was a good answer, too. All right, now you got $15. Here's your third question. How much of the 15 will you bet? And remember, either of you can answer this question, you know.
Five.
You're going to bet $5, huh?
Ten.
$10. You're back in Belgium. He's the boss over there.
Yeah, I can see.
All right. Who is the composer of The Marriage of Figaro?
Oh. Couldn't be Mozart, no.
Mozart is right.
$25.
All right. You got $25, and here's your last chance to beat the other couples. How much of the 25 will you risk?
15.
Who is the composer of Rigoletto?
Is it Verdi?
Verdi is right.
And they wind up with $40. And that means the housewife and the baby photographer with $250 get the chance at the DeSoto Plymouth $1,500 question. Things you can always count on when you visit any one of the DeSoto Plymouth dealers. Efficient service, courteous service, service at a fair price. These dealers are equipped and eager to give your car the very best in service, no matter how major or how simple a repair job. DeSoto Plymouth dealers have factory-trained mechanics who know your car inside and out, regardless of what make or what year it happens to be. And in the hands of these expert mechanics are the most modern tools and equipment made. In other words, you can always count on really top service when you drive your car in at the sign of any authorized DeSoto Plymouth dealer. And here's the housewife and the baby photographer, the winning couple, all ready for the DeSoto Plymouth $1,500 question, Groucho.
All right, here's the lady with the eels and the chocolate dips, and we'll see how smart you are now. Here we go for $1,500. I'll give you 15 seconds to decide on a single answer between you, so think carefully and please no help from the audience. Here it is. In the original Constitution of the United States, there are 7 articles. How many amendments have been added to the Constitution? You must tell me exactly. What is the answer you two have decided upon?
22.
No, no, I'm awfully close. There are 21 amendments to the Constitution. I'm sorry, that's the correct answer, 21 amendments. So that means the big question next week will be worth $2,000. Well, you lost the big money, but you won $250 in the quiz. Congratulations and thanks to both of you.
Your Life is a John Goodell production, transcribed from Hollywood, directed by Robert Dwan and Bernie Smith. Music by Jerry Fielding. Be sure to tune in again next Wednesday night at this time for the Groucho Marx Show, You Bet Your Life, presented by the more than 3,000 DeSoto Plymouth dealers of America. And remember, all dealers who sell DeSoto also sell Plymouth, two great cars, both products of the Chrysler Corporation. And don't forget, next week, the big question will be worth $2,000.
I'd like to thank the readers of Radio Mirror Magazine for voting our show the best of its kind on the air. Well, Bing Crosby's all tuned up and ready to go, so good night, folks, and remember, just be sure to see your DeSoto Plymouth dealer.
Folks, here's a tip from the National Safety Council. If you can't control your temper, you can't control your driving. This is George Fenneman, signing off for the more than 3,000 DeSoto Plymouth dealers from coast to coast.